purse and turf then?
No, it'll just be funded in a similar manner, meaning the actuarial assumptions will be there. Same actuarial methods.
B says the contribution rate shall be a percentage which, when applied to recovered compensation, will generate sufficient contributions to support.
We got in the House Bill 215.
Right, and that rate is the number two rate.
Okay, we have under discussion House Bill 215 for the record.
96% of pay. Right, House Bill 215 is the same or very, very similar to Senate Bill 90 or 91 of last year. And what has happened that's somewhat different than last year is that last year they did pass a bill that says that new judges will contribute 7%. So the existing judges are still in the same judicial system, but there's no contributions made on their behalf or by them. However, new judges are under that same system, and they will contribute 7%. The other part of it is, however, is that the employer is not setting aside any money to make up the difference in what the benefits would cost. And the actuary has looked at it and puts it at about, identified in the fiscal note on a number two, is about 96.0246% of pay. So what the bill would do would be to put the judicial retirement system on a funded basis. And to do so would, as you can see, is going to cost quite a bit of money.
On the projections out to fiscal year 84, it keeps increasing. At some point, does the will it be funded?
Yeah. What will happen is I only used about a 5% assumption, and the reason is that depending on what happens with the salaries of judges, plus you're paying off your past service liability, so you actually have two forces at work. One is reducing the rate, and one is increasing the salary or the basis being used. So we came up with, we used 5% in this case, but what will happen is that over 25 years, the past service liability, which is about $13.9 million, identified in our number one, will be paid off. At that point in time, we'll be contributing just for the future cost of the employees. So we're paying off the fact that we haven't funded the system for so many years, and then after 25 years, that should be paid off. And then the rate will have been coming down all that period of time until it approaches around, I don't have the number, Ken, you might have it in that pack, but I think it's around 55 or 60% of pay, somewhere in there. You remember the number from the Richardson's letter to me?
Yeah, it's all here.
Yeah.
In the appendix.
I'll give you that number. It will finally come down to
future service 44.46.
Okay,
44.46. That's, okay. Yeah, that ought to be some kind of eventual bottom line way out there.
And that would be equivalent to, I guess, in the PERS is about, we're paying 12, and
10.
I think that's 2, it's about 10%.
Which agrees very well with the relative benefit crediting. 2 is compared with 8, 40 is compared with 10. You know,
and then the other,
that's pretty good.
And the teacher's, teacher's rate of, what are we up to, 12%? No, 14% is got some past service built into it. 2 or 3% or so, if you got like 11. 10 and 11 as a pair compared to 44 if you didn't have any past service. So, but it's at 96 now, and if you don't pay into it, the only thing you can do is, like I say, keep going up, because you're just not, it's like living in your house without paying rent, and then one day the guy says, I want all my back rent. So it's pay time. So.
Do we have a figure, Paul, for the comparable cost, which is shown here for the first time in fiscal year 80? What would have been the cost of the system, of the benefits being paid for the previous year?
The benefits that are projected to be paid are, is in that little asterisk right there. That's what the actual benefits drawn out of that system will be, about 389. And if I remember right, last year I think the judicial system had 365,000 in fiscal year 79 that they would actually pay in benefits. But what's going to happen as the judges start coming out and start retiring, that number is going to go up dramatically. It's the old balloon payment kind of thing at the end. So it'll exceed the values we're showing here if you don't fund it. So, quite obviously, we're, you know, in this year, it's been awful difficult for the governor to say, yeah, I'm going to try to cough up this kind of money, because it just, it's a very tight fiscal year. But he recognizes the importance of getting this system on a funded basis. Otherwise, just the old future generations are going to bite the bullet. And he sees that the same way he sees financing government out of non-renewable resources when all of a sudden the cost is there and no money to pay for it.
How about this as a statement? The board endorses the attached fiscal note, etc. The board notes that these costs are not increases in the total cost of the system, but rather are the payments which are currently required to prevent the costs from ballooning a few years in the future.
That's the name of the game.
I think in the past we've supported this and recommended it. So.
This item four, now that is that kind of indirectly the thing that we mentioned earlier, is it kind of a built-in cost of living factor that is true of this system?
Well, it's just that like the salary commission came in and recommended that the judges' salaries go up. And so other than that kind of an increase, they're not on a set increase kind of scale. So I just used the 5% as a good guesstimate. I don't see growth in the number of judges, even though now we got a bill in that would do that.
That figure there doesn't have any effect whatsoever on the benefits with which the judges will receive. It's only an actuarial assumption which would affect the state's funding level, and if it proves high or low, then the funding will rise or fall in future years to compensate for that.
Wasn't this a system though where retirement benefits are based on what would be their current salary?
Yes.
See, and I thought that was being reflected here partly.
Only insofar as estimating what the benefits will be, but not determining what they will be.
I think we're ready to go ahead with a vote on this one, unless there are any further questions. Okay, let's take a vote on House Bill 215. Stan?
Do pass.
Merrick?
Do pass.
Mike?
Do pass.
Paul?
Do pass.
George?
Do pass.
And Frank? Votes do pass.
I think I hear Jerry calling in.
Yeah.
Jerry votes do pass. How about we get a letter in the mail saying if that comes up, I vote on.
About Senate Bill 168.
Okay, we have.
That's one that there's been some interest in the content of, and might not be at all untoward for the board to think about the philosophy involved here.
Let's look at Senate Bill 168. Oh, we still have some time left. I have three bills left, actually four. Okay. I have bills that we haven't taken. Actually, we rescheduled House Bill 8. And
Senate Bill 119.
And Senate Bill 119. For, and we can leave those till next time.
What about 74? Is that the
74?
I can't.
That's the Naval National Guard.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah.
We've ducked that.
Okay, we didn't defer it, but just put off any details.
Right. Now, did on House Bill 8?
We did report.
Yeah. On House Bill 8, we didn't report anything.
No, we haven't done anything.
Okay, we'll just leave that one going. And I have three more. 119 we've held off on.
On House Bill 8, we might want to put in a kind of a dummy rec, because that was January 24th. Just say, you know, no analysis, okay. No recommendation, yeah, but not, you know, technically, legally stopgap it.
Okay.
But
let's go ahead with on House Bill 8. The first one we discussed, we had no fiscal information, so just for the record, unless there are objections, we'll just put in a statement that we've taken no action on it pending receipt of fiscal information.
We might note that there is a significant or some fiscal impact.
Yep.
Or okay. So that that can be construed as a statement if they want to go ahead and move it in the absence. So.
We got a 3-day weekend ahead of us.
Who does?
I'm using my weekend
Monday.
Day.
Washington's
birthday.
Washington's birthday.
Oh, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just.
And you didn't have to work today?
No.
Well, who scheduled this?
Be about like Lincoln's birthday. That one almost killed me. We had such a great holiday.
Okay, Senate Bill 168.
Next time we'll do it in your holiday.
Oh, gosh. Don't.
Which seems to be similar in some cases to what we've been discussing. An act relating to earlier service retirement credit for territorial employees. I don't have a summary or a fiscal note.
I can sum this baby up.
See, but I think Paul has something to say.
See number 10 down there?
Number 10, yes.
See, now, this is another thing that you can bring in free. They're adding the United States Corps of Engineering Civil Service personnel and the National Civil Service personnel. So if you
Naval
worked at,
Civil Service.
Yeah, Naval, yeah. If you work either one of those places, you can bring it in free and get credit for
Naval
it.
Civil Service.
I don't know
that
who
must
that
be
is.
Naval. Must have been working at ADAC or something.
That'd be like, you know, what we used to call the RADs over in Conrad's over in Germany, the civilians working on our bases. Same thing.
I think.
And Rody, the next bill, is the same thing. We might even look at that one. He's including or expanding it to pick up the, that's under Senate Bill 174, pick up radio operators. Radio operators at the Civil Aeronautics Administration.
Are they already including
heavy equipment
operators? So the only.
We don't have that bill.
Every
Senate Bill 174?
174.
No.
They brought it in late after last. All of the things that are mentioned are included except the underline.
Right. This is an amendment to pick up what's underlined. And I'd like to introduce my bill that I sent back, or my letter that I sent back to Senator Ray regarding this same.
Some kind of general statement about inclusions in this section, I think, might be called for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, addressing the question of, well, what was the question there?
Well, he had an inquiry from a Charlene Stewart, B. Charlene Stewart. And she was saying that she couldn't understand why her experience as a radio operator at the Civil Aeronautics Administration should be creditable. So Rody put a bill in. But I wrote back to Senator Ray and thanked him for the opportunity to speak to this issue. And
didn't Ms. Stewart also wonder in her letter, yes, not just why radio? There was a better question there, not just why radio.
Yeah, the bigger question is why not just all federal service, period.
She was concerned with this equity question, in which she was not, I think, so much lobbying in her own interest as I had an opportunity to look at the letter, but simply wondering what is the equity in including some of these, like heavy equipment operators, and this seems like a question that this board is...
Did you say, Paul, that she was chairman or secretary of the Greater Worldwide Environmental Society is asking for this consideration?
No.
Give her a straight answer.
So anyhow, that was where it came from. Her inquiry was, she said, I've watched this list grow from year to year, and already now you've got, I think, 9 or 10 categories that are already covered that are federal. Why not just open it up for all federal? Or is it only the elite that can get to one of their legislators? I mean, that was the kind of thing that was implied, they can get added in.
You did say yes, didn't you?
Oh, I wrote back, so that's a great idea. And no, I wrote back and I said, what we ought to be doing is shutting it off, not expanding it. And this is that letter that you'd asked for, Mayor, and I'll give you a copy. But I think the whole idea is, it's got to be asked, what are we really doing as far as employment 20 years ago in today's retirement system? If the purpose of that retirement system is to attract and retain qualified individuals today. And I'm sure that granting 20 years, going back 20 years ago to grant some time in the territorial days isn't going to do much to attract somebody today. Just isn't going to do it. They're working with the state. You know, they'd be in their late 40s and early 50s if they were only 20 years old when they started back then. So that's one part of it. The other part of it is the tremendous cost. We last year, under the goodness of somebody's heart, we brought in 40 individuals from the Alaska Communication System.
We
brought in 20 former peace officers of the territory, 60 individuals. Those 60 individuals in today's dollars cost us $2,246,850. Or in other words, that benefit we gave them is worth $37,000 an employee for those 60. And to me, that is just nothing other than pork barrel, I don't know what else to call it.
Well, any one of these categories that are already included, Paul, just for an aside, what merit, for example, one of those you may have mentioned, Civil Aeronautics Administration, heavy equipment operators, they're already included, as I understand it. Now, what additional merit would or did they have then, we'll say 10 or 11 as being added under 168? That is the United States Corps of Engineers Civil Service and the Naval Civil Service. What distinction is there between the two groups?
Well, let me speak to that. I guess what we got is a series of wrongs.
I'm trying to sort that out.
Let me pull what I've said in here. Since the time Section 360 has been amended, let me go back and kind of build some history for this. Section 360 was originally enacted by the legislature to be effective January 1, 1961, the same time the PERS was established. However, in its original form, Section 360 authorized only the crediting of service rendered while an employee of the Territory of Alaska and required that the employees subsequently work for the state in a covered capacity, making contributions for a period of 5 years before such service could be credited. Then, as now, no contributions were required for creditable employment segments prior to state up. As I understand it, the original purpose of Section 360 was to reward those career territorials, state employees with a retirement benefit for service rendered to the Alaskan government and Sinistry prior to the time when a comprehensive PERS existed. Since that time, Section 360 has been amended at least 8 different occasions. Those amendments have reduced the period of service which must be rendered to the state to 3 years and expanded the eligible employment segments to include service as an elected official with the territorial political subdivision thereof, service as a peace officer of a participating political subdivision, service with certain political subdivision detention facilities, and specified types of employment with 9 different federal agencies. I repeat, no contributions are required for any of this service prior to 1961. Each time Section 360 has been amended, it appears that the same basic argument is advanced. The affected individuals perform de facto, if not de jure, service for the state for that reason should have that time credited for retirement purposes. While the law does provide that any PERS retirement benefit shall be offset by the U.S. government, by any U.S. government pension received for the same period of service, it does not provide that the same offset for any pensions payable from a political subdivision. Even the U.S. pension offset is of questionable fiscal value to the PERS, since the only source from which we can obtain that information is the affected individual. Reporting a federal pension is essentially a matter of good faith. As Section 360 now reads, one can easily appreciate Mrs. Stewart's contention that it is unfair to keep expanding the coverage for select groups of persons while making it available to everyone. Reading that section from the employee's perspective, it easily appears that it has been amended without rhyme or reason. As she notes, it is difficult to appreciate how service as a Civil Aeronautics Administration heavy equipment operator is of any greater value to the state than her service with the Federal Housing Administration. In fact, it is difficult to explain how service in the current eligible categories was of any greater value in the development of Alaska than work as a miner, logger, commercial fisherman, etc. during that period. However, in my opinion, the solution to resolving inequities which now exist lays not in adding to the list of selected elite groups, thereby merely altering the perspective of some persons, but rather by re-examining validity of allowing any select groups to profit in the future. Aside from the social policy ramification of crediting all types of federal service prior to statehood on the PERS, we must consider the horrendous costs of such move to the Alaskan taxpayers. And I went into the cost of just the addition of those 60 people. And then my recommendation was, in light of these considerations, I once more suggest that employees hired on or after July 1, 1979 not be credited any service under Section 360, and that Section 360 be expanded no further.
Could you just say this is sort of a little bit like a Pandora's box?
Well, I don't know how many federal employees there are out there, but I got military people that serve time in Alaska. They're a federal employee if there's ever one, and they love to have this come in free. They sit with it. Chuck Elrod, John Logan, and Carl Peterson all had time up here pre-61. I'd like to bring that in free. Boy, that's another one they can write in with. I guess the punch is that the purpose of this chapter, this is 39, 35, 110A, the purpose of this chapter is to encourage qualified personnel to enter and remain in the service of the state by establishing a system of payment of retirement, disability, and death benefits to or on behalf of the employees. To fulfill this purpose, the PERS must provide competitive inducements to attract qualified employees. However, we cannot endorse system enhancements at the expense of the taxpayer, which no demonstrable need exists in order to fulfill its purpose. Nearly 20 years after statehood, I suspect that little, if any, need exists to attract former federal employees of the territory era by providing more benefits. On the other hand, the cost crediting of additional federal service from that period works somewhat across purposes to the chapter. It not only costs money, but it actually encourages those employees not to remain in state service by increasing the amount of service that might apply towards a service retirement. So that's when I went on and said that we had to just shut it down and quit adding to it. Or to put it differently, there's a lot of other things that I'd like to see that money go towards. And that's what I was talking about is so if you can quit increasing the past service liability and start diminishing that and then use that to take care of your PRPAs and health insurance, you're going to be ahead. And that's where we should be heading rather than tacking this kind of stuff in there.
You want to vote on that?
Ms. Stewart's letter was also directed, I think, to all members of the legislature, so this question is, you know, very much before the legislature at this time, you know, if for no other reason than her efforts.
I sent a response back to Senator Ray and then copied all members of the 11th Alaska State Legislature, so they got a response, but, you know, it's definitely there. And
you got no reaction to your response?
I don't know, I got a guy in a dark coat following me.
The question is, what does he have under that coat?
Yeah, I don't know.
I sort of feel like
I didn't say under his hat.
You've heard that joke too.
I know the last name of Aranoia.
I sort of feel like the like what you've expressed in the letter, that you can just add to this every year, and I suppose the legislature could open it up and just take everybody or not.
Well,
but that our sort of past recommendations on similar things have been the board's been opposed
along
to.
Along the lines of the letter.
Yeah, right.
One succinct way of doing that, and I'm not trying to push this too hard, but one way, if the board indeed feels that way, I think that letter was so well written. You didn't write that, did you?
Oh, I had no input to it.
But Linklater wrote it, didn't he?
No.
Well, indeed that is, isn't it? One possible way of expressing itself, if the board does agree, is simply to endorse the sentiments in that letter. If not, there are other possibilities, but it would speak to this general question that's before the legislature, and would also, I think, settle the questions of 168 and 174 in a general context.
I'd sort of like to see us handle both of these bills together with a similar statement on each of them that we feel that rather than expanding coverage, that it ought to be stopped. Does any member of the board have any opinions other than those expressed in the letter about expanding this section to include a lot of other people and past service? Or I'm getting the feeling that everybody is in more or less in agreement with the sentiments in the letter, but I want to make sure.
Well, I do have a question. At that time, we did have a very weak type of teacher retirement system that was later done away with. There was no vehicle for retirement systems for public employees at that time. Am I right? In Alaska? In the territorial days. How old is the public employee?
1961.
Well, you might. One way of doing it is you might retain the original content of it for territorial employees, as it was apparently originally drafted, and cut out recommend cutting out all the federal add-ons that have succeeded that. I don't know.
The system originally started out, it was a state employee retirement system. It was just for state employees. It wasn't all that clear retirement system back then. But in around 1968 or 69, the legislature changed it to the public employee retirement system. But since that time, all the political subdivisions have been coming in. And when they did that, that's when they opened the Pandora box, because you've got people scattered from here to hell and have input with your legislators, and then you start getting all this type of stuff.
Yeah, it's been used for other things. Crediting military service is another way of came a veterans award.
Was the intention, though, when it was expanded to become a state and municipal type of system?
Yeah, they named it the public employees rather than just the state employees. However, it was a state employees, but
But I mean, the intention when they called it public, they were thinking in terms of state and local types of officials rather than federal at that time.
Well,
I probably didn't know at that time.
I think
all groups, you know.
That seems clear, and the same arguments I would think would apply from the point of view of affected municipalities as well, although what except for maybe one of these, this only applies to people employed with the state, this particular buy-in possibility.
I'd like to take a vote on both of these bills at once here, and then figure out a statement to go with it. That's agreeable. So let's go ahead and vote on Senate Bill 168 and 174. Stan?
No recommendation.
Merritt?
Do not pass.
Mike?
Do not pass.
Paul?
Do not pass.
George?
Do not pass.
And the chairman votes do not pass.
I just add, Frank, that I agree 100% with the sentiments expressed in the letter to which we were referring. I'm just momentarily and technically troubled about any question of equity or discrimination as I read names like somebody in the United States Corps of Engineers. If they're security guard, they're covered. But the same organization, another type of employment isn't covered. I just don't follow. That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Very unfortunate.
I think that bothers all of us.
And yeah, I think we need a statement on here that I'm not sure the wording here again, but that more or less expresses the sentiments that Paul did in his letter.
How about
or just referencing the letter?
Referencing the letter and copying it and saying that generally speaking, the board subscribes to those sentiments.
That would be agreeable to me.
I was really impressed with how well written the letter was, from a technical point of view.
Are there objections to that? And then go ahead and include it.
I think that really adequately covers it.
I have about 4:05.
Yeah, I think our
so you guys.
I think we just
for a quick vote on Senate Bill 119.
I don't think we can do it that quick.
Well, we've already deferred it.
We've deferred it.
No problem with that. I think we've come as far as we need.
Now, are there any recommendations for another meeting? Another time and place.
Ken, when do you think we need to have?
Well,
what time are you leaving?
This has been a fast.
Today? Oh, I got on to it. We did leave at 4:15 or we missed the limo.
11 minutes to get on the bus.
This.
Okay.
Otherwise, we walk.
I think there's a very slight possibility that we might be able to get a copy of the housekeeping bill, but if not, I'll just mail one. It looks like it's moving.
For all practical purposes, I won't be available for most of March, till the very end of March. And I don't know if anybody else has any at the end of March or beginning of April commitments.
You will not be available
till the last week in March, at least.
I would kind of hate to have it. I'm going to be down here the first week of April, but my problem is, I guess I'd hate to be gone that whole week because I think I'm going to be here the 5th and the 6th at least. It's kind of hard to be absent for great stretches, mm-hmm. So I guess I'd rather have it either the last part of March or else earlier.
Well, I think that the last week in March would probably be soon enough. This is a quick-moving session, but with Frank not being back until then, it might be well to wait until then to meet. And if
To make me chairman and watch it move.
Yeah, we'd all enjoy that.
We could settle on an exact date sometime later and send you a memo, but let's look at the last week of March. And how about a day of the week, not a Friday? Or does it matter now?
For me, it didn't matter. I think it was Jerry that was concerned about Friday, wasn't it, Sam?
Do you have any day of the week that's...
Your days are 26th and 30th. It really doesn't make any difference to me.
I guess I was the one that liked the beginning or end of the week.